Good afternoon, everybody. How are we doing? I bet you're wondering what I have. I'm Jim Duffy. I'm with Code Magazine. Any subscribers? Code Magazine subscribers? Here we go. Nice. Our March-April issue, for those who've seen it, we put four .NET rock stars on that cover. We put Scott Guthrie, we put Scott Hanselman, we put Anders Hausberg, and we put Mr. Scott Hunter on that cover. And they were really good sports about it. And we asked them to sign. No, I'm not showing it to them yet. You got to wait for the reveal. Come on. We asked them to sign an autograph, full-size poster of that cover. Now, the good news about this is we had them sign enough so that all four of them each get one to hang in their office because they feel special like they're on the animated couch. The best part is we had them sign an extra one, which we're going to give away to one of you. It's at codemag.com/poster contest. Fill out an entry form, and you may walk away with a fully autographed by the four .NET rock stars Code Magazine poster. That's all I got. Good luck. Hope you win. Gentlemen, the stage is yours.
All right. Okay. Cool. What does this button do? All right. Cool. You good? You feel good? All right. Oh, that's us. There you go. Hey, cool. Oh, you get the clicker?
I got the clicker.
All right. Cool.
So Scott Hunter, I'm the Director of Programming Management at Microsoft on the .NET platform.
I'm Scott Hanselman, and I make up my title each time. I guess I'm a director today.
And so we got lots of content and not enough time, so we're going to go through some of this stuff pretty quickly, I think.
Right. As always, we try to make sure we don't waste your time, and we know that you don't want to see just one demo. You want as many demos as possible and as few slides as possible. So we've brought you 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 computers all running daily bits of imaginable things.
We have at least 10 demos.
At least 10 demos. So lower your expectations?
Yes. There is a Channel 9 session after this, and so if you have any questions from this session, please tweet to this, and we'll be online later after this to answer any questions you have from the session. This is just kind of our big thing, is .NET can run anything. Desktop, web, cloud, mobile, gaming, IoT. We're going to introduce some AI stuff in this talk today.
This means that everyone in the audience can do all of those things.
You can build anything with .NET.
And this is really important, and this is a part of the big message, and one of the reasons that I've been at Microsoft so long, and why I came here in the first place, is that I'm a C# developer. I really enjoy C#. Maybe you're an F# developer, or VB developer. And I started out in WinForms. And in the last 10 years, without me doing anything, I became a web developer, I became an IoT developer, I'm doing things on Raspberry Pis, I'm doing things on Android and iPhone and Apple Watches, and I'm still using the same language that I like to use.
And it works great on all those platforms.
And it works amazing, doesn't it?
Thank you. People always ask us, you know, is .NET still growing, is it slowing down or whatnot? And, you know, we're happy to announce that in the last year we've added 1 million .NET developers between .NET Framework and .NET Core. So we're doing quite well.
And this is important to point out that these are what are called active developers. This isn't like we went and looked at the download numbers, and the download numbers are big, so we're here to show you a graph that looks like that and say, yeah. These are actually people who are actively multiple times a day, multiple times in a week, doing stuff with them.
Loading Visual Studio for more than 1 minute. They have to load it for, use it for a couple minutes, multiple times a month to actually be counted as an
before
active developer.
Before they count as active.
So 1 million people that are actually using the product, not doing a hello world and closing.
Right.
And
so there walking. Could be like 1 billion inactive .NET developers that have just loaded Visual Studio a year ago, and it's just been staying there. So I like to think about them as well.
This is always a phone-in for us. We never knew when we open sourced .NET whether it was going to have that massive adoption where the community actually really gets behind it. But you can see the community contributions to .NET have just exploded since we first open sourced .NET. And we're really, really super happy about this. One of the cool ones, Samsung. They're the ones that's responsible for the ARM32 port initially, which now is how we run .NET Core on Raspberry Pis.
Yep.
And so that's a huge open source contribution we've gotten. Illred Games has done a lot of the, Ben Adams has done a lot of the performance improvements that you see in ASP.NET Core. And so those are huge things we won from open source. We want to talk about this, .NET Conf. This is our virtual .NET conference. We've announcing the dates for the first time today on this, September 12th to 14th. Later this year, we'll have multiple days of Microsoft people, community people, all talking about .NET. and all the new stuff we're going to show today. This is great. We started announcing .NET Core 2.1 RC a couple months ago, and I'm happy that this morning at 8:30 we announced released the bits for download, so you can actually grab these bits today. We'll do a couple demos on these, and we're hoping that we're going to have an RTM probably around the end of the month. So this is really close to being RTM.
And there's a lot of improvements we're going to talk about, particularly around speed.
Yeah, the big thing is the faster build and runtime performance. If you were using .NET Core inside of Visual Studio, it was super fast all the time. But if you were trying to build applications from the CLI, the build performance was not nearly as good. And with the 2.1, by the time we actually RTM 2.1, we basically have this back to the same point it is in VS. So you get the same performance from the CLI as you get from VS. Another big thing for us is we want to continue closing those gaps between ASP.NET System Web and Entity Framework 6. So there's a bunch of stuff we've done here to keep bringing stuff on. Once again, improve compatibility with .NET Framework. We want to make it easier for people to port your applications. So the .NET Compatibility Pack is a NuGet package that brings things like directory services, imaging to .NET. We're all probably aware of the GDPR stuff that's going on with the EU. We've got full support for that in ASP.NET Core. There's some cool work we're doing in microservices. I'm going to show one of the templates a little bit later on as part of this. Download 2.1 RC, give us feedback so we can RTM this thing as soon as possible.
That GDPR thing, man. I'm pressing OK all day.
Yes.
I'm actually thinking about harvesting. Like, I'm going to make Bitcoin mining based on people clicking OK on GDPR dialogues.
There's going to be a browser extension at some point that just
automatically pushes GDPR OK for you.
This is showing the incremental build time performance that we've had with 2.1. And you can see with 2.0, this is building a large web application. To the 2.1 preview, to 2.1 RC, you can see we're roughly into about the 4 to 5 second range now.
And a really important thing to point out, and it's just a reminder to everyone who uses .NET Core, maybe you're getting interested in using .NET Core, the .NET Core SDK versions at a speed, and the .NET Core runtime versions at a speed, and you don't need to switch over to 2.1 and to still get the tooling improvements. So you could build with 2.1, get 5x or 10x speed improvement on your builds, and then still continue to run at your runtime in 2.0.
In 2.0, exactly. This is super exciting. We started taking part in this Tech Empower benchmark a couple of years ago, trying to get .NET to be up in the upper tier of this. And with 2.1, you're going to have another wave of improvements here. Super excited, especially about the data one. So if you look at the one on the right that says Fortunes, that's a benchmark that basically looks at data access. And you're going to see that between 2.0 and 2.1, we've increased the performance of data access by roughly 123%. And that's across Postgres, MySQL, and SQL Server. So all the big databases, we've actually got much, much improved performance.
And just to be for context, the one on your left there, plain text, is the do nothing. Right. And it's really easy to do nothing. If you do nothing, you can do it infinitely. So saying hello world, we can do that, you know, like if you want to do like enterprise grade containerized hello world, you know, we can do that like 2 million times. But like doing actual stuff, we are seeing 100% improvements and greater in doing real stuff. So upwards of 250,000 requests a second.
Yeah, in Tech Empower, at least running it internally, we were in the top five in data access now.
Across all stacks in the entire benchmark suite.
This is just a quick slide kind of showing you the big stuff that's in 2.1. Global Tools is one of my favorite, where you can actually install .NET applications right from the NuGet, from the .NET CLI, .NET install. Span of T is one of the ways we actually save memory. We've got a brand new socket layer that is part of the reason you see that performance improvements. We actually rewrote the sockets, used the bottom of .NET Core to make ASP.NET Core faster. At the same time, HTTP client, you know, just receiving calls is great. You need to be able to send calls as well. It's 10 times faster. Windows Compatibility Pack, we talked about before, it's that NuGet package that brings a lot of the libraries you might have been used to in .NET Framework.
One little throw, you put span of T in there as kind of a throwaway comment. If for those of you who are interested in like internal geekery of like how .NET and the CLR works, span of T, go and in Google with Bing for span of T, and it's a bigger deal than any of you possibly know. Like, there's going to be some fundamental, groundbreaking changes, and you're never really going to know. It's like it's taking an engine, swapping it out with a hybrid, and then swapping it out with an electric motor. You're still driving a car, but we're basically turning like a Honda Accord into a Tesla with Span of T. So it's going to just make everyone's life better. For low-level people, they'll get to experience it. For high-level people, things are just going to continue to improve. It's great.
Yeah, we actually don't copy memory as much. What we're doing is we're reusing memory versus making a duplicate memory all the time.
Yeah, it's really lovely.
Lazy loading is a huge feature that the EF people have been asking for. That's in EF Core. We have HBS on by default in ASP.NET Core. Big ask we've had in ASP.NET World for forever is being able to compile UI into a library. We've got that with Razor UI. And HP Client Factory is a big one that we're going to show a demo of it in a second, which is how you can set your retry logic and retry rules globally versus having it all throughout your code. And we finally got ASP.NET Core SignalR running as well. We'll do a demo of that.
Demos.
Okay. This is pretty cool. We announced this morning, I think, or maybe we're the first to announce this today.
Did we announce? Yeah.
We have SignalR service is now a service in Azure. So if you're running a big SignalR app, you used to have these things where you could get a different backplane, SQL-based, or use some eventing stuff inside of Azure. Now we've got this as a service. You can basically set up SignalR and, I need 1,000 connections. I need 5,000 connections. I need 10,000 connections. I need 100,000 connections. All scale in the cloud of Azure. We're going to show that. Just a couple clicks.
I actually had a side hustle, an app that I built with Xamarin with my buddy Greg, and we went and manually put in SignalR hubs in multiple locations, and we did a whole thing. All of that is now SignalR as a service in Azure, just to make that scale with a slider bar. Refactoring via subtraction.
One more quick thing on features. .NET Core is now supported on ARM32. And we have it supported not on just ARM32 for, like, we now have the SDK running on ARM32 as well. So you can actually install the .NET Core SDK on a Raspberry Pi if you wanted to.
One of the big complaints was that you had to compile for a Raspberry Pi on a Windows machine and then push it out to the Raspberry Pi. And you had the runtime over there. Now with the work of Peter Marku in the community, we've got SDK, .NET New, .NET Build. It's slow. It's a Raspberry Pi, but it's still awesome.
Azure IoT, the announcements this morning, they're running on .NET Core for some of their work. And pretty cool as well, Samsung, as I said, who actually ported .NET Core to ARM32. All the TVs rolling out in 2018 have .NET Core running inside of them. In fact, the dashboard you see when you boot your TV up is actually Xamarin Forms running on a Samsung TV on .NET Core.
So definitely and absolutely do not go to Best Buy and vandalize any of their things by putting a .NET sticker on random televisions. Do not do that in any way, because the stickers will not come off. And don't ask me why I know that.
Okay, so let's switch to number 7, Scott.
Yes, sir.
So what I've got here is I've got a SignalR app, and I just wanted to show really quickly, we just introduced this Azure service today. So if I have a SignalR app, all I've got to do is call this new method, add Azure SignalR. And then down here, I can say use Azure SignalR, and I'm done. Now this application, instead of running its hub locally, will run it in the cloud. We'll quickly just kind of show what the code looks like here. Just for people that don't know, SignalR is a service that lets you send messages and receive messages to thousands of clients. You're going to see here, we're going to run a trivia app. And there's a method here called push question. And you can see that it grabs a question, and then it sends that question to everybody that's connected to the service. And that's how SignalR works. It's basically you let everybody can connect, and then you can send stuff to a ton of folks. So let's try this out.
So you're going to run the admin here. What he's going to do is run the administrative console for these questions. And SignalR, of course, using WebSockets and using all of the magic of modern modern browsers.
So let me launch the admin first. And we'll get not yet.
I know. I want to see if it works. Because we never tested this in front of 1,000 people before.
So I'm going to load the admin console up first.
Okay. TriviaR.
TriviaR. And now what we're going to do is we're going to go to the Azure portal.
Okay.
And I have an app service here called Real-Time Trivia.
Okay.
Let's boot this up.
Cool.
And here is the URL.
Zoom.
And we'll zoom in here for you guys.
Okay. Go and hit this now. This is going to be either a load test, or we'll just see what errors look like in .NET Core. And it'll probably hiccup. There will be errors if 1,000 people show up. Like, load testing usually ramps up. We should do it like the wave. We should have people go like this, and then they all hit
You're going to laugh. Well, Hanselman asked me this morning, we've load tested this, right? And I said, yeah, with about four people.
15, 20, 22, 26, 25, 35.
Yes, you can see in real time as people hit the URL, you can see the count.
The website is on Azure, but the SignalR hub runs as part of SignalR as a service. And where's your scale? How did you scale that, sir?
So what I did is over in Azure, I went to, let's go out of the website here.
SignalR hub.
And we'll go to our SignalR service in Azure.
Okay.
It's right here. And what I did before we actually started this
150.
We have these units, and this is a unit of 1,000 connections.
This is going to cost you $20.
And I went over here and dragged the slider all the way to 10. And
so we have 10,000
concurrent connections is what this should support.
Okay.
Should support. Looks like we have 170 plus people inside of here.
Well, people are tired. They don't want to pick their phones up.
I'll go to the admin console. And what I can do here is I'm going to start the game.
Cool. All right. I'm on the game now.
And now what I can do is I can take .NET trivia and push it to folks.
Let's do it, baby. Ooh, I got a question. What color is the .NET bot's belt?
And the wrongs are firing up at a rapid rate here.
Incorrect. Incorrect. I put that he wears a belt at night, but not in the daytime.
This is pretty cool. We have almost 300 players now.
It's kind of a lame question, though. Do a really good question. Okay.
How many contributions outside of Microsoft have been made to the .NET Foundation open source project?
There's almost like 500 people on now.
Okay, so the next question was just fired to everybody.
Correct.
Man, the wrong is really weird. These things.
Real time, y'all. Real time. Now, it's important to point out also kind of how interesting this, just to prove that this is happening in Azure, you notice that he's running the admin on this local host. But his local host is talking to the SignalR as a service. This way, y'all can't snick into the admin because it doesn't exist in the cloud.
Look at this, we're up to 800.
800.
Let's push the final question.
Final
here.
Question. That is a horrible question. ECMA, what is that? Is that C sharp? I'm thinking, okay.
Ooh, you failed.
What was it?
You could thank Beth Matthews. She's the question person here.
When the button, when I got it wrong, it said dang. That's adorable.
That's not bad. This sample is something that we will actually make available for people to try out later today.
Isn't that great? Big hand for Brady Gaster for writing that sample for us. And big hand for Azure for working on the first try. We literally, our original load test was 20. And it was basically like us, nine people on two machines pushing F5 really hard. And so I'm glad that worked.
So the next one is something that I want to show is, you know, we're an API-centric world now. I mean, we all have mobile devices. We might have applications that use JavaScript on the client to talk to the back end. But Visual Studio has been primarily focused on building things with UI. And so it's designed to debug things with UI. So I've got a ASP.NET Core web API here. And you're going to notice it's kind of complicated. It's got a controller folder. It's got a www.roof folder. It's got a bunch of stuff here.
No pressure if you feel any.
And I'm going to run it. Well, there's nothing to show there.
Still, zooming is nice.
And so you'll see that the debugging experience in Visual Studio for APIs is amazing. You get a 404 error.
Well, because it's not a web page, it's an API. There is no home page. It would be nice to have a better experience, certainly.
So we've been experimenting with how we can fix this. And so there's a couple things that I want to show here. First off, this is a prototype of a microservice template that would come in ASP.NET Core 2.2. And you're going to notice that all I've got is a controller. I have no controller folder. I've just got a program CS. It kind of boots the app up.
Microservice.
We'll talk about more things that are here. This is a microservice.
Nice.
So let's try that same problem again. And you're going to look here in my app. I've got add and stuff like that.
Because if you're going to add two numbers together, you need the power of Azure to make that.
So I'm going to go, and instead of running in a browser, I'm going to select that I want to run the HTTP CLI.
I want to make sure that you hit that hard, sir. You see where it says IIS Express there? Web browser is not going to be Internet Explorer, the greatest browser. It's not going to be Edge, second greatest browser. It's not going to be the other browser. It's going to be a new browser
called HTTP CLI. This is an experiment. We're brainstorming here.
And so the idea is now I'm going to control F5, this API, the same way we did that API okay. before.
Check this out, y'all.
But now.
Zoom in, sir. Zoom in.
Now I get this console here. And from this console, I can do things like, let's do an LS. And notice it went
Hang on.
Down.
Wait. Pause for effect. It's like web API church, sir. What did you do? I pushed LS into a web API.
But this is pretty cool. What we've done is we automatically instrumented your API so it can actually return some diagnostic information to a console.
Can you do more, sir?
Yes, we can. So let's go here and let's try to call that method, 1/2. And you're going to notice that...
You did it wrong because it says 404. You got to say add /1/2.
Yeah. So, and you'll notice that I can basically call methods right from the CLI and get my result back of 3.
Mm.
Let's say I come over here and I want to change it. I could change this to say multiply, change the route, and I'll change the code like that. I'll just save it.
And I won't talk to you about the overflow issues with multiplying two ints together. That's fine. It's cool. You're a manager.
And I'm just going to type LS again. And you're going to notice that it picked up that change automatically.
Mm.
And now I can do things like multiply /5/5.
Maybe multiply like 2 billion times 2 billion.
And you'll see I get a 25 back. So that's kind of cool. Now, maybe some people in the room don't like CLI. Maybe you want UI. So I'll just type UI.
No. Yes. Yes. Did you hear that?
So what
people,
we've done...
People were like, where's the visual in Visual Studio? I didn't ask for CLI Studio. I'm paying for Visual Studio. Sick of Microsoft and all the CLIs. Bringing DOS back.
So here you go. You get the same experience in UI. So we've made your microservice have Swagger by default, Swagger UI by default.
And this is a prototype.
It's a prototype.
Do you want this? There you go.
Now I can.
You get a prototype CLI for the HTTP that you can use to explore your web APIs. And you get a prototype. Okay, sorry.
And
I'm very excited about
this. One final thing, just to close this out. You get that same experience where you can actually put breakpoints in your UIs, and I can call, and my breakpoint will actually fire in my API as well.
Mm.
So super cool.
I'm here to add value. Yes, thank you.
Okay. So why don't you show us HTTP client?
Oh, okay. Is that on this machine?
That's on this machine.
Okay. Do I have to use the little nubbin thing that you have here? He's got the trackpad with the little eraser. I don't want to use the little eraser. All right. This is my podcast. This is an opportunity. The reason that I get to work here is I can use this as an opportunity to advertise my podcast. This is my show, and it's called Hansel Minutes because I'm a notoriously bad estimator. Apparently, at some point, I said they would take about 30 minutes, and I did not take 30 minutes, and they said, is that Hansel Minutes or real minutes? But this is, in fact, a 30-minute long show, and it's really great. And this has been going on for 600 episodes, and I have crushing imposter syndrome. So the first 500 episodes were trash. But the last 100, I really feel that the show has been hitting itself nicely. Now, this is all running in ASP.NET Core 2.1. I've actually been following the regular builds. I was on preview 1, preview 2, preview 3. But it had no tests.
And you're on Razor Pages, too.
Oh, yeah, I'm on Razor Pages as well. It's lovely. I have no tests, and it's kind of complicated. And I've got all kinds of logic in here for dealing with the fact that my older system was on a thing called Web Matrix using ASP.NET Pages. So this is a 12-year-old podcast with 12-year-old code that I ported directly from Web Matrix over into ASP.NET Core using Razor Pages, and it only took me about a weekend.
I was going to say, how long did that port take?
It took about 4 hours of typing and then about 4 hours of Stack Overflowing.
And I, by the way, I was nice. I ported this app to ASP.NET Core 2.1 RC for Scott this morning. So,
yeah, that was good.
So he's now in RC.
So there's two different kinds of tests that I might want to do. There's basic unit testing, and because I can use Razor pages, I can literally just make a page model and call on get. Now, in this case, I'm not using HTTP. I'm not testing HTTP. I'm doing a unit test where the unit is, hey, can the get work? And I'm wondering, is this going to go and work, right? If I say nothing to on get, is it going to come back? Is it going to show 16 shows? Is the most recent show 620? That's convenient, but it's not real. There's no HTTP there. I wanted more functional tests. So here, we've got this cool new feature. We've got web application factory and server factory. So I'm saying, hey, there's a server factory, derived from web application factory, and I point it to my startup. So I'm basically spinning up my application without actually spinning up my application. Because there's layers, right? There's unit testing, there's functional testing, there's full end-to-end integration testing. This isn't integration testing where I fire up a web browser and I talk to it with Selenium or a Visual Studio test. This is above unit testing, but below full end-to-end integration testing. So I'm going to say, hey, we're going to use localhost. I'm going to use an environment, except we're not going to use HTTP and do any, we're never going to hit the wire. It's all in memory. So here I'm going to say, hey, I'm going to make a test fixture that's cool, and then I'm going to ask for a client and a server, okay? And then I can ask questions like, hey, client, get this asynchronously and pass in a slash. And then I can say, did this give me back an okay? So that's like a basic test. But here's an even cooler one where I can say, go and get a show. And then I can say, give me an HTTP client that meets these needs, because each test has different needs. If I go and hit localhost and say, I want show 624, you know, I don't necessarily want auto redirect. So I can go and check on that. So I'm going to go and hit this here, which is 624, and I'm going to assert, did I get a move permanently? If I said auto redirect equals true, it wouldn't have given me that redirect, and I couldn't actually test my redirect mechanism. This is actually testing in memory all that cool middleware code that I put in my startup.cs. Now, I'm using Visual Studio Code, and I always like to see how far I can take Visual Studio Code, you know, without paying for anything. And I've added this .NET Core Test Explorer from the community that adds things like run test. So I'm going to go and run that test, and you can see that that test failed because I am a manager and not an actual programmer. And then I'm going to go ahead and hit this, and I'm going to say over here, run. I can run individual tests with this great little tool. So this is going to go and run all my tests in the standard way. I'm using XUnit. Blah, 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 test execution. I've also plugged in a couple of other things that are cool. And this is all just putting together open source stuff to make this experience great. I've got the .NET Test Explorer. Wow, I am a lousy programmer. Well, I'm not going to figure out why that's broken, because that's just dumb. Yeah, that just makes me sad, because now I don't know why my test broke. But what I can do is I can go and see what my test coverage looks like. This is a great thing called Coverlet. So when I ran that test, it went and created line number stuff that is in the LCOV format, and I can go and see what parts of my application got exercised and what parts didn't. So the unit testing, integration testing, functional testing story is just so nice in ASP.NET Core 2.1. If you take those things, you can build a whole suite of tests and then expand by pulling in, you know, this open source project like .NET Core Explorer or Coverlet or another thing like OpenCover, et cetera, and you get a great experience. Everything's coming together very nicely, except for this test, which I'm going to be obsessed with knowing why that is failing. But I'm going to go ahead and just, what? Oh, you freaking people. I just want to point out that there's 1,000 people in the room here, and no one felt the need until I was twisting in the wind But I'm not bitter. That's fine. You know,
it's more dangerous than being in a room full of developers.
Well, it's pair programming, but it's mob programming.
Mob programming.
Mob
yes.
programming. Right. With a wholly and completely unhelpful mob, which is fine. So thank you for that. Ah, there you go. Now the other ones are question marks. Cool. Yay. So unit testing is a joy right now. All right. There we go. You good? You got to push the button twice. You gotta go like this, and you gotta go like that. Here you go.
Okay. So this morning there was some blog posts that went out before we were on stage.
What?
I know, it's crazy. We announced the .NET Core 3 roadmap because, you know, we're just shipping a .NET Core 2.1 RC. It's kind of a funny thing is when we started doing .NET Core, I thought we'd only do a version a year. I mean, a version every 3 years.
Yes, our goal is to do a version, a brand new major version every week.
And we're heading that direction, it seems like. So we seem to be on a major version every year, but we've been adding so much stuff and such big stuff, it feels like that. And so the big thing is if you look at .NET Core 2, it's primarily web and cloud were the two workloads we were really trying to drive. You're going to see with .NET Core 3, we bring in desktop. We bring
Buckle
in
up,
IoT.
People.
We bring in AI. Who in here uses WinForms or WPF?
Come on, old heads. Where are my old heads at? WinForms. Here we go.
People have asked us for the last couple of years, are these things alive? Are they moving forward? Yes, they are alive and moving forward. In fact, they will run on top of .NET Core 3. So they're on the
Pause
core platform
Pause for effect.
Now.
What if you could run .NET Core under WinForms? Just like we talked about, you've got this car, it works, it's great. You're going to swap out the engine and put another engine in it that is better, faster, stronger, but you still get the car that you know how to use.
And we'll show you some of that bigger, better, stronger.
It's going to be amazing. A
couple of big things here is WinForms and WPF are obviously both supported. There'll be talks this week on something called XAML Islands. This lets you host in a UWP inside of a WinForm or WPF app. So if there's an awesome UWP control out there you want to use, you can just do that. We'll show one later today.
I want proof.
XAML controls. We'll take the most popular UWP controls, we'll put them in the toolbox for WinForms and WPF so you can just drag them right into your applications and they'll just work.
So they'll like appear as a WinForms control in the toolbox?
Yes. HiDPI fixes for WinForms. We'll get to that on the next slide, but to fix HiDPI, we actually have to break the behavior of WinForms. And so you really want to have a side-by-side release of .NET to do that on so you don't break all the existing applications. And so .NET Core, being a side-by-side framework, will enable us to actually fix some things that we couldn't fix without changing all billion machines out there that run .NET.
And we want to pause and talk about that for just a second. Side-by-side, why is that important, right? The .NET framework is great. But if you have any fear of it, if your organization is afraid of it, if you are afraid of it as an app developer because you think a minor version might fix something, might break something, what if you could take your important mission-critical WinForms apps, WPF apps, and make them self-contained? That's one of the value propositions for .NET Core 3.0.
All access to all the Windows 10 APIs. We'll bring WinRT to .NET Core so you can call those APIs. A really exciting one we're going to demo is the .NET Core App Bundler. This lets you build a WinForm application. You can decide you want to pre-compile the app. Then we can link out all the bits of .NET Core and WinForms or WPF that you're not using, and then turn that into a single exe.
Demos. No slides.
We're getting there.
I don't want to see slides.
You might ask, why did we just not do enhancements to WinForms and WPF on .NET Framework? Well, we are. So anybody out there, you should not be. .NET Framework is alive and well. All the XAML Island stuff, the controls in the toolbox, they're coming to .NET Framework 4.x as well. But there's a reason to bring these desktop frameworks to core, and that is the side-by-side, which Scott was talking about. You can have either an app local or a global version of the framework. One of the cool things, I showed that open source, CoreFX, which is the BCL that sits underneath .NET Core, it actually has lots of performance changes and even some changes of behavior of some APIs we've made to fix things. We can't take those and put them into .NET Framework because we're afraid they would break too many applications, but the side-by-side nature of .NET Core lets the BCL there move a little faster, and the WinForm WPF apps will take advantage of that, and we'll show that. And if you're a big fan of, we've been showing the CSproj project model where you can edit the CSproj in VS, hand type in there, that would come with these apps as well.
So to be clear, I would have a WinForms app or a WPF app, and it would have a CSproj that's the new style.
Okay.
All right, prove it to me, sir. No one believes you. Seven, go. Visual Studio.
So we will load up build demos.
Dun, 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 da, ba, 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 da.
And before we even look at that, let's just...
You're going to gloss right over that. You're just going to...
I'm going to gloss over that.
Show us that, but then not talk about it.
So I've got two versions of the app. I've got a version of what I call PySample. We go look at a folder on the disk, and we break it up into a pie chart and show you how big those things are. I've got a version that runs on .NET Framework, and I've got a version that runs on .NET Core. So let's go run the one on .NET Framework first. Let's zoom out of here. Make him the default. And first thing you're going to notice when I do this is a WinForm application.
This has some controls, Telerik controls.
Got some controls. It's got a Telerik control inside of there. And what it does is, I said, you just give it a folder.
Backslash?
Am I in Unix world? Yes, I am. Give it a folder, and you type run, and it goes and scans the code in the folder and shows some stuff here.
So that's the control, and you click on that and it does stuff.
And then
click on a thing.
Click on one of these. It'll show you the folder name, how much size is in there.
Cool.
That's a cool app. So let's go back over here, and let's switch to the .NET Core version. And the first thing, as I said earlier, you have these SDK project styles. So this is the CS proj.
Let me do this.
That supports this.
Let me see.
You're going to notice a couple things. There is WinForms it looks like a package here.
It's marked alpha.
And
what are those?
And I just went and found some random Telerik controls out on the disk somewhere at Microsoft and stuck it in here as well.
Fully licensed and paid for.
Because I wanted CS. If not, Sam will come and ask
just
my credit card.
Okay. So loose DLL is being included as a reference.
But the point here is this app is running on just some controls that already exist. Nobody had to port these Telerik controls to .NET Core or anything like that.
Cool.
So let's run this app.
Somehow less interesting because I've seen the app before.
And we'll type in the same thing we did before.
We can do something more interesting.
I will. But you're going to notice this is now 200 milliseconds.
Oh, wait a second. How much faster?
Versus 500 milliseconds. So it's twice as fast.
Ooh. Now, is the WinForms app just twice as fast for free?
For free.
We should charge.
So what happens is we've done a bunch of performance improvements on CoreFX. And one of them is file enumeration APIs. They're better. Because of that, you can see that it's at least twice as fast, if not more. Because of that change. I want to show something else. You know, you could all sit in the audience and go, sure, you say it's on .NET Core.
They're saying that.
It's all demo. It's all fake.
It's all fake. Most of our demos are fake.
So we put this question mark in, which basically shows the assemblies that are loaded in the application.
Yeah, and if you scroll by really fast, no one can see it, which also
but if you zoom in here, notice that it's pulling .NET Core 2.1, all the libraries. So this is actually really running on .NET Core 2.1.
Okay.
Now, let's go a little crazier. That was great.
Let's go crazy.
Wouldn't it be great if you could actually take a .NET application and just publish it? And so what I'm going to do is right-click on this app, just like I would for a web app.
Mm-hmm.
I've got my publish here, and it says desktop single file.
Okay, cool.
So what that's going to do is take that .NET Core application running WinForms. It's going to run it through our linker. Our linker is not very advanced yet. It will get more advanced. And it will, on my desktop, stick out a single file.
Okay.
Is it there?
Yep. Okay. That is now on this USB key.
Put on the USB key there. And just to show this, it's the same app that we saw before.
Okay, double click.
I thought I did.
Circle of patience. There it is. Okay, cool.
But I do want to show it really is a single file. It's 66 megs, which seems a little heavy, but we haven't really worked on the linker tech a lot yet. But it shows the indication where we want to go, where you can take a WinForm WPF application, compile them on .NET Core, compile them to a single exe. They don't depend on anything on the machine at all.
Not enough.
And you're good to go.
Not enough.
So we should have somebody from the audience.
Windows laptop, ready to go. Windows laptop. Bunch of guys sitting here playing Doom. Okay, right here. Come here.
So we did a demo a couple of years ago where when we were first building .NET Core, where we go to conferences and we put ASP.NET Core on a memory stick and run it on a random laptop
it,
in the
right
audience.
Does it have HDMI?
This time we thought we'd actually do the same demo.
Is that my phone?
With okay. Windows Phone.
I'm gonna keep that.
That's
plug
fine.
That, plug that in. That's your phone? That's my phone, man. That's your phone. Okay, plug that in for me.
All right, there we go.
Okay. Where does this go on this laptop? Fix your... your resolution is crazy. Okay. Boom. I don't like your desktop.
You gotta turn it around.
You gotta turn it around?
Yeah. There okay. we go.
Okay. How does it, what does it do?
It should just pop up and say, it sees it.
I plugged it in.
All right, let me just
open. Oh, wait a second. This is 8. The people don't believe you. Is that 8? There you go.
No, that's mine.
That's your unattractive desktop.
That's mine.
What?
No, yeah.
That's his desktop, man.
It's mine.
No judging.
Sure?
I'm kidding.
Go to, what's it?
So let's go down to
this PC, man. There you go, that one.
USB drive.
Run. Don't run any of those movies that I brought. I downloaded those later.
Can I have one?
Double click on that.
There you go.
What is this computer? This is, we've got Windows 10, anything, daily builds or anything? You're not doing anything tricky?
Nothing special on this.
Okay. Okay, so now hit like browse and go somewhere.
All right, cool. So I'm going to open, let's go to.
Something you don't mind putting out to 1 million people.
No pressure. Right?
Yeah,
open
really.
This.
Dev?
Open my dev folder.
Okay, cool. And then run. So this is running, you have a lot of stuff, man.
Not.
Show me more stuff. That's not interesting.
Nah, that's not
interesting. Do better. Open that
let's
up.
Do, like,
there's
got to
be
files.
More interesting stuff in there.
Program files is not bad.
What's
right.
in there?
I'll open this .NET
okay,
folder.
Let's do in there. Run
go.
That again.
Run it.
This is running off the. There you go. There you go.
There we go.
Hey.
So this is a WinForm app with a Telerik control with .NET Core on a memory stick with nothing on his box.
Is that cool? Now I'm going to pull the memory stick out, and this will probably crash because the disk is gone. So good luck with that. Thanks, man.
Thanks, sir. Is that cool?
So, you want that too, right?
Yeah.
All right, cool. WinForms application. Could we take real legacy code? Not legacy code that the manager here did yesterday. And that's not to say we didn't prepare very hard for this show. I'm just saying if someone were to theoretically make a demo on an airplane, it might look something like that demo. But. Can we switch over here?
Yeah.
What if we to take something special, something that's truly old?
Truly old. Great.
How old is it? I guess we're on VGA, so forgive the quality, and we're not on the internet, which is also nice. Doesn't really matter. My son is 12. He'll be 13. Does anyone remember Baby Smash? So half of you are like, oh, Baby Smash, my kid's in college. And other ones are like, Baby Smash? Who's smashing babies? No, this is a game for kids where I was using this 12 years ago to learn WPF. And I would go and push the buttons, and it would bring up Baby Smash icons of letters and stuff like that. This is a 12-year-old app that I literally wrote when my wife was pregnant with our second kid, and the first kid was on my knee. We were watching some Lifetime movie, and I had nothing else to do, so I wrote this. What if we could take this 12-year-old app and just add something like XAML Content Host and drop in like Inc., a control that didn't exist fundamentally in a technology that didn't exist at the time that this was created, and then run that? Let us try.
So this feature is this demo is showing XAML Islands, which is the.
What'd you say?
Baby Smash.
Baby Smash, right? Star. W.
No, that's good, man. We don't have sound, but I can do it again. Talk. So we've got an integrated ink control inside of Baby Smash that's been done with UWP. I could add anything. I could add in website content or whatever. Did not have to do anything to this application except bring it in and add this XAML host control. Now, in that case, you can see I'm doing a XAML host control, and then I brought in the ink. But in, like we said, in the future, some of those things might, the more popular controls might appear in the toolbox, and I can just drag them over and use them. Is that cool? I don't feel like you really appreciate that it's cool, but that's fine.
It made Hansman really happy that he was able to take his old app and put modern UWP controls in it without changing pretty much any of the source code at all.
It's pretty good. And there's a WPF dialog box over the top of the whole thing. So it's real, just to make sure that y'all know we don't fake demos. It was all pre-videotaped. All right. 7.
Ignore that somebody had to hand build that laptop for us.
That's coming soon. 7, take. Is that you?
We're going to go slides.
Slides. Five. Take. Clicker. Oops, I think I just dropped the clicker down the hole. Let's try that.
Okay. Briefly talk about, .NET Core 3. Our hope is to have a preview of this out later this year. You can see that we have actually had it running on my laptop with both. We didn't show it, but I have a WPF app as well. We can run WinForms WPF on it today, so we're actually further ahead than I thought we'd be. But there's some hard challenges like getting the designer to work and stuff like that. So hopefully we'll get a preview out later this year. There will also be a .NET Core 2.2 later this year as well, so it's not like we're going to stop just while we're waiting on this. Productivity. We're just going to quickly breeze through some of this stuff as Casey and Amanda and Kendra are all speaking. I think Amanda already spoke today on this, on a variety of these things. But we continue to actually try to add productivity enhancements to Visual Studio. The Visual Studio that shipped this morning, crunch, has a bunch of cool stuff in it. Things that I'm really excited about, we don't have it in here, it'll be in 15.8, is editor config is a cool way to put rules on your programmers saying, here's the style that you're allowed to use. And right now it's only a Visual Studio feature, which means the compiler will compile it whether you do the styles or not. We're going to add that to the compiler. There's a bunch of cool stuff we have where you can take link queries and move them to for eaches and back. We got some cool stuff we're going to show where we can now decompile code if we don't have the source code. We understand source maps and NuGet packages. So a bunch of really cool stuff in here. The Test Explorer is super fast now. Brand new icons that show how fast or what the actual progress.
Demos.
This one's a cool one to me. Visual Studio for Mac 7.5 was released today. Last year, Scott and I were on stage, and we were talking about, hey, they're going to add support for Razor, and they're going to add support for JavaScript, and they're going to add support for TypeScript. Those are all in there. We said, hey, they're going to add support for containers. Full container support for .NET Core is in there. Azure Functions. All the big things in Visual Studio have been migrating over to VS for Mac. And not only are they there, it's the same code. We're code sharing between the two IDEs. So these are very similar. From a web perspective, you're going to see a lot of work that's going on in Razor formatting. As you said, we added it to VS for Mac. But a big thing coming in 15.8 is refactoring. So for forever, as long as Scott and I have been on the web team, you can never actually refactor inside of an ASPX file or then a Razor file. That support's finally coming. If you tried our Docker tools, they put this weird compose project in your project. We're going to remove those now. You can just run right from in your regular project. Kubernetes support's coming in as well. We're going to show that. And publishing to app service non-containerized. So let's do a couple demos here.
Is that cool? Can I do this over here? Are you doing this or am I doing this?
Why don't you start, and then I'll do the AKS stuff.
Okay, sounds like a plan. I feel like I want to go back, though, at some point and talk about .NET Core 3. I don't know if they felt it in their chests. It's a big deal. Okay, cool. I'm just saying, there's a lot going on, y'all. Okay, cool. So a couple of new things here. This is in 15.7. And I've got some tests for my application here. Back in the day, you would hit run all, and then you would just basically wait, and you had no real sense of what was going on. Now all of this is being asynchronously communicated to you. So I'm going to go and build this application and then start running. And each one of these is happening asynchronously, and it's going to report how things are going and what's going on and what worked and what didn't, which is nice. Now, within this, I can go and look at some particular code if I wanted to. And you'll notice, of course, all the good stuff like CodeLens, talking about whether the test failed or not. Those things all are awesome. I have in, I think it's on git async.
Yeah.
Async, there we go. I've got some funky code here that I have mixed feelings about. Where we say like from route and routes, and then I don't really know how that works, so I've commented it out, and then I go into a projection. And like I say, I'm feeling a little weird about this because sometimes link is amazing and sometimes link does things and I don't really know why it's happening. So I'm going to actually go and select this link query here. I'm going to get this helpful screwdriver.
Comment.
Helpful screwdriver is cool. I'm going to put that back in. Helpful screwdriver. Bup, bup. Helpful manager. Well, what did it say? Who's this? There's a helpful screwdriver up on the top, and there's a helpful light bulb over here. The light bulb tells me different stuff. I'm actually going to say convert to for each. This will give me a real sense of what is going on in that link query, or perhaps that link query doesn't let me give the control that I want to get. So I've actually flipped that into this enumerable, and then I can go and call that right there. Some people prefer link queries, some people prefer for each. It is the identical result happens. This is just one of literally like dozens of new and smarter refactorings. And again, if you didn't see Casey and Kendra's talk, you can see it on demand video, because they go through a ton of the stuff that's been improved. Now, back to my tests, which were over here. I'm not feeling your mouse, sir. This is not working for me. There we go. I've got a test here that continually does not work, and it's saying is null or empty, and that's super annoying. I've got another test that's bugging me. Display time is correct. That one's here. This actually has a helper DLE called bus helpers that goes and takes some information. I'm going to debug that. So I'm actually going to right click on that and debug. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to hit breakpoint right about yay and say right click, debug selected tests. Go and check that out. Now, bus helpers came in. It's not any source that I have. You look over here on the side, it's actually coming in as a dependency from elsewhere. I'm sure where it is here. Bus info, where's bus helpers? One of these places has a NuGet called bus helpers. It's in the beast somewhere. I'm not even going to go look for it. But here, I do not have that source. I am going to F11. Now, hang on. People are like, I think he paused. We should clap. Again, we don't want your pity applause. It's got to be real or we don't want it. When you bring down a NuGet package right now, that NuGet package knows that it has these DLLs for you, but does it know where the source code came from? It doesn't know from whence it came. So what do we do? What do we do? I'm not even going to click the button. I'm going to let it hang, and I'm going to look here at the new spec. The NuGet spec file knows where the source is and the commit for this one. Remember when we promised you this? Don't applaud yet, it's not done. I'm gonna hit download source and continue debugging. I wanna just say something. It popped up a message that just said, the debugger is locating source files. And now I'm gonna hover over this here. And that file is available. Here's a little tip for you when you have these little transient tabby deals. You can right click and say open containing folder. There's the file that came down. And now I am F11ing into a NuGet that I got from elsewhere. Now you clap.
We demoed this last year, but it was fakery.
It was fakery.
And now it's real.
Okay, so then I want to point this out. I went and tried to say F11 off into some other code that I didn't have the code for. And that was not that was something that I did not have a NuGet package for. So that can be annoying. Excuse me, let me stop that. I was digging. Where did it go?
It was in a cert.
I'm lost. What's happening? No.
Dude,
I was over in the tests.
Go to the tests. You had an assert in the test. There you go.
Somehow I feel like bad when you help me. I don't know if that's your intent. If I want to debug into like assert r equal, right? What if I could right click on that and say go to definition, and I get a giant scary legal thing that says this. Legal.
The legal thing is reducing in the next version.
There be dragons, okay?
Yes.
Nice. Good luck, y'all. Click. Navigating to definition. Way. Look, we just decompiled the thing that we wanted to go. I just go to definition and decompiled it. And because I've got the PDBs and stuff, because I brought this DLLs else, it pulled out the help as well.
Can you show folks where they would turn that on?
Where would you turn it on? Somewhere in Quick Launch. I think it's like experimental something. Hang on. Don't make me feel bad, because you always do that. It's not there. I know it's not what I just clicked on. It's in advanced.
Here you go.
C# advanced enable navigation to decompiled sources. What could go wrong? So the point here is that when you're doing that debug experience, you want source code. Ideally, people will start putting in their new specs that here's where the source code goes, and you'll be able to F11 into anything. Now, of course, we're showing you one where we have a public NuGet that happens to have public source code up on Git. Certainly, that could work in an environment where you have your own NuGet server and your own source code that exists in different places. So there's a lot of possibilities here. Imagine if you're working on an enterprise app and you only have the little bit of code that you have, like we saw me in the keynote with 10 projects, and I hit F11. And then I find that another team on another NuGet server that has source published in their new spec, I could F11 into that. And then I reach some other team, and they're mean, and they won't give me my source. I right-click, and I go to decompiled source. You like that? All right.
And one more. Let's add the editor config in.
All right. Now, editor config. I feel like editor config is like the little feature that could. It is so powerful, and people don't get it. We didn't what?
I said we didn't put the solution items in here for you.
No, I know. It's fine. Okay. That's cool, man. I'm chilling.
Making sure you figure it out.
I think it's important to show people that I can type.
You know what makes fun of me? I like when I actually can.
Well, you're a manager, you know. You manage your stuff. He actually has an app with a demote button. This is true. He didn't want me to tell you this, but he was in a meeting. And Glenn was doing a demo. He fires up a little app, and he hits run, and he types in Glenn's alias and the big fat button that says demote. And then Glenn's doing his demo, and then he just rotates his laptop so that Glenn could see it, and it says, Glenn, demote. He just starts pushing the button really hard, saying, do great on your demo. Is that the app right there?
Yeah, it was.
Like, you think I'm making this up, y'all. It's marked right there, demoter. This is, help me. Help me. Is this a cry for help? All right. So what you can do in your editor config is I can go and right click here and say, like, add new item. And I can say I need an editor config file. And it's called .editorconfig. Now, this isn't a Microsoft thing. This is a thing. This is an everybody thing. And this is one of those things where, you know, you like tabs, but you live under an authoritative regime. So they impose their will upon the people by checking in editor config. And editor config is understood by all different editors. And this goes and says things like style, and I want XML files to have an indent size of 2, like a savage, and, you know, stuff like that. But to Hunter's point, the compiler didn't really care. So then you'd end up with rules in like FXCop talking about here's how I want C# to behave. It would be nice if the compiler understood editor config as much as the editor understands editor config.
Which then means your CI system will actually catch people.
So what if we did this? We really want to make people hate their lives. We will get rid of the ability to do var. Yeah, right? Again, help me. So here, we're basically saying, no var here. If the type is apparent, no excuses, none. Like, all these reasons. And then, go like this. I put that at the solution level because I want to make it suck for everybody. And then I'm going to go into control T. Was it on git async?
On git async, yes.
No, it's not doing what I thought it would do. I maybe put the file in the wrong folder. I don't know. It's supposed to be for everybody. Did I save it? Yeah, don't even. Someone's like, did you save it? Probably not. It's fine. This is fine. Do I have to compile? What do I have to do?
Yeah, it should have just worked.
What did I do wrong, sir? This is where you have to help me. It is saved. It's like, I thought it was a squiggly, but it was dust.
I don't see it.
Is that supposed to be true? None?
That looks right. That was the stuff we put on.
Yeah? I don't like demo fails. I don't believe in demo fails, so I don't believe that this is a fail. Does that file go there? I'm just going to copy it everywhere. Because I don't even care.
That'll
right? Because I just want it to work. Ship it. I don't care.
That'll be my next app, editor config everywhere.
Change it from none. What does that even mean, man? Warning. Well, come up here and help. Oh, I see. Look at that IntelliSense, too. That's nice. Thank you for that.
Close the file, reopen the file.
Close the file, reopen the file. Yeah, when you whisper that, no one can hear you. Do you know that that's... Now I got what? Oh, man.
Yeah, you copied it everywhere.
Why are you all so mean to me?
You know you can delete those other copies.
No, man. I'm about to compile. I'll get that to ship, baby. It's like a train wreck. I know the wrong place. I don't even know.
Converting your app this morning was the same way, your CS project.
So I've messed this all up because, hey, yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and just ship that. Is that cool? All right.
There is a big new thing in 15.7.
Totally knew that that was what I had to do.
Which is, it used to be that we would show you this fix thing and you could fix one thing. You never want to fix all of them, would you?
Is this yours?
It was.
Okay.
So now we have a fix all.
So, all right. Now show potential fixes and fix it everywhere, because a search and replace that works globally across your solution is always the right idea. No, but seriously though, this is a good idea, because what's nice about this isn't a search and replace. This isn't a control H. We've all done that. This is a Roslyn analyzer. So this is guaranteed to compile the code. It is still going to work. These are making non-destructive changes. And they also follow, when you're doing them on a file basis, they stay into the, zoom out, sir. They stay in the undo buffer, so you can control Z your way back to glory.
Let's see if this works.
Oh, it's probably not going to work. I didn't fix the test. I'm just trying to make it pretty.
Ah, it succeeded. I think we're...
They succeeded in compiling.
That thing compiles. That's good.
Yeah, but the tests are still deeply, deeply wrong.
Let's show one more productivity feature here.
Okay.
So I've got an API and a web app. And this morning, you were showing some Azure Kubernetes service.
Love me some Kubernetes.
And so we have a preview extension coming out probably next week.
Yep.
For 15.7, where you can actually add Kubernetes support to any .NET application. So notice here, I've got this container orchestration support I can click on.
Okay.
And it says...
Oh, and I can pick an orchestrator, and you're picking Kubernetes and Helm. Nice.
I'll do that. I'm going to do that on this.
A miracle happens.
I'm going to do that on this.
What just happened?
I'll show you what that's going to do in a second.
You're yada, yada, yada-ing through the important part.
Yada, yada, yada.
Are you going to do it to everyone like I did?
Just
you gave me crap about adding
editor. Just those two. We have a double app. So we have an app that has API.
It's got two parts.
And we have a web. If we were going to publish this to Kubernetes, I'd want to publish both of them, not just one of them.
My bad.
So I added orchestration support to both of those.
Okay.
That'll put a charts folder in with a bunch of metadata and templates and stuff that Kubernetes supports. I don't want to get into that.
You know, YAML stands for yet another markup language.
Lynn and Steve have a session going on right now, unfortunately.
Yes, there is actually a Kubernetes and Docker session right now that Glenn Condren and Steve Lasker are doing, so watch that in the replays.
And they'll talk about how to actually, what those files are and how to use them.
Yep.
But after I do that, I now have this new feature here, Publish to Azure AKS.
Cool. Pause for effect.
It actually takes a little bit of time. That's why this is a preview extension.
Oh, okay, cool.
It's mining Bitcoin.
Oh,
right
and this
now.
Is the whole, it's mining.
And
that's our new strategy, mine Bitcoins in the publish dialogue. It's not like you're doing anything else, right? Every refactoring.
And so what this will let me do once it finishes giving us the circle of patience is I can select my subscription, my AKS cluster, and my container registry. And then once I'm done with that, my project's set up with one-click publish to AKS.
Okay, so it is going to do the build and the stuff that it usually does, and then it's going to publish it. And if I understand correctly, it's going to publish it by pushing it to the container registry.
Right.
And then doing a deploy or an update.
It will basically push each application to the container registry as a container.
Okay.
And then it will actually then tell AKS, go pull from the container registry. It's like, hey, I know the container registries have both changed, do a pull. AKS will pull those images back in, and your app will be running.
How concerned should I be right now?
About what?
The circle of patience.
How much patience do you have?
Well, it depends. There's people here, and they have. If we went into the expensive meeting calculator, we're costing these people money.
I think we have time.
Okay. You're mean, dude. So something ain't right.
This is experimental. I will say that. And honestly, the demo would end at this point anyways, because after it's done.
Well, the demo would end by these things filling up and you hitting OK.
I'm trying to save it and make it sound good, Scott.
OK, that's cool. All right, so let's
switch back to slides for a second.
Let's all pretend that you pushed OK. Oh, my God, that is amazing. Fantastic. Good job. 5. You good? Take? Good.
Oh, yeah, we have 2 demos left. Are we going to do this one, or is Ankit going to do this one?
Where's Ankit? I don't even know where he's sitting. I'll do it.
.NET machine learning. This is something that we're excited to talk about today. If you're using .NET and you think about machine learning, we have a couple things in Azure. We have a great pile of services called Cognitive Services. And these are basically AI for people like Scott and I that don't know a lot about AI. And they're really cool services. They're just REST APIs. You call them, feed them some data, and you get a result. And this is what, if you don't know AI or you just want to use some pre-built AI, this is great tech, and I highly recommend it. But there's some issues with it. You can obviously hear I'm looking at this for sentiment. I might have something that looks to see what the sentiment of stuff is. And you're going to see this is going to score really red. This is a great vacuum cleaner. 96% positive. This next one. This vacuum cleaner sucks so much dirt. Well, normally the word sucks is not a good thing. But in this case, it actually is a good thing. This is a great vacuum cleaner. It sucks a lot of dirt. But our sentiment analysis says this is not a good review of your vacuum cleaner. And so this shows you where some of this pre-built stuff can kind of fall down in some cases. And so what we would ask somebody to do is basically build a custom model. So get some data, train a model, and you're hurting me here. And so there's a bunch of AI libraries out there for a variety of texts. And you can see them up here. And we're happy to announce today that we have something new called ML.NET. Which is based on some tech we have in Microsoft. We've been using for years for Bing and for Office and other products inside of Microsoft. And we thought, hey, we got this great tech. Why don't we open source it, give it to you guys, and make the APIs awesome for regular .NET developers. And it can actually consume and work with some of the other .NET AI libraries out there, like a core.NET and CNTK.
Mm-hmm. So this is the launch. We are launching
ML.NET. Right
now we're calling it 0.1 for a reason, because I want to make sure that you're clear that this is something that has been used internally for years. It is used by, can we say?
Data scientists. I already said Bing.
Bing, all the big stuff. And what we've done is we've brought some of it out, all of it out, and it might be a little messy. We're going to tidy it up. So you might see some stuff that is internal stuff, but it's all open source, all the way down the stack, trying to make machine learning available for .NET developers. Remember at the very beginning how I talked about how I started out doing WinForms. I came from Visual Basic 6 to WinForms, and then without doing anything, I became an Android developer, and an iPhone developer, and a Raspberry Pi developer. Now you all just became machine learning experts. So I want to make sure you add that to your resume and your LinkedIn profile. Immediately after this session, because I want to see thousands and thousands of machine learning experts who know how to press F5.
Switch over and let's do a demo real quick.
So we'll switch over to 7.
So we wanted, a lot of times we demo AI stuff, we demo kind of fluffy stuff that people never really use.
Yeah, this is real.
And we actually, in Ankit's talk tomorrow on AI, he has 3 cases of real-world things that you can actually take his code and use.
Right.
This is one of them.
He's going to go deep into this tomorrow at 2:15.
And so the idea here is, when you file an issue in GitHub, a human today goes and says, oh, that issue is networking, or that issue is ASP.NET. And we said, could we use AI to actually do this for you? So I've got a GitHub issue I was just about to file.
Okay. So something wrong with client WebSocket. I don't even know what namespace client WebSocket is in, right? And then you're going to go and hit submit new issue on that. And you'll notice, of course, that it's got no labels, it's got no assignees. Some human who has an amazing job is going to have to go through that manually and figure that out.
Yep.
But humans have been doing that for years, right? In fact, we've taken thousands and thousands of already talked about, this is a tab separated file, these are thousands and thousands. This is a non-trivially sized file.
We took years of data from our repository.
Right. So when you type in, this library sucks so much dirt, then we can figure out that you really hate that library.
And this works because we've had all these issues. I think there's 10,000 issues in here.
Yeah,
all these issues have been hand-selected by an engineer, so we have great training data here on how to do this.
16,000 and change. Cool. So then, here's the part that's cool, and this is why I'm not joking. Maybe you're not data scientists. You'll need to go and talk to your data scientist. The data scientist can go and train this, or you could train this yourself. We went ahead of time and did the training on this. It took about 5-10 minutes, and we took that file, that TSV, that tab-separated value file, ran it through the model, and then turned it into a blob. And that blob is the model. You can see here it's in a folder called models. That is not a DLL, it's a blob format, but I could hand it to you, he could hand it to me, and he could say, here's the model, or here's the updated model, I've trained it, it knows more stuff.
So F5 the app.
So what we're gonna do is hit F5, and this is gonna go and talk to GitHub and pull out the unlabeled stuff, and I can go and F11 into that, and it's gonna say for each issue in issues, it's gonna go and get all of the GitHub issues, and then it's gonna think about those things and label those. Okay? Labeling complete, go back over into GitHub and hit refresh, and nothing has happened. Is it not new enough?
You have to do it within 1 minute.
One minute of what? Oh, it's not fresh enough? Oh, because, so this is an interesting point. Just to be in the interest of clarity,
We didn't want to scan the entire system.
We didn't want to scan the entire system. Now, ordinarily, the right way to have done this is to make... Go ahead and do it again. So what we needed to do here, and I'm not making excuses, I want to understand that the right thing to do would be have like an Azure function or a bot that was running in the background. A GitHub webhook would call over to that using like the ASP.NET Web API webhook library and then kick it off. For the purposes of the demo, we put that into a console app that's going up and talking to that because I want you to understand that you know how to talk to the GitHub API. You know how to call a web API. Now you're just going to call this ml.net
library.
There
you go, Scott. Look on the screen.
There you go. Labeling completed. So it's looking for fresh items within the last minute. This is, for the purposes of the demo, a polling example. Hit refresh and zoom in on labels in the lower right-hand corner there, sir. You're super fast with the zoom it. I love it.
No, I'm looking to see if... there it goes.
Zoom.
There you go.
There we go. Look at that. So that automatically figured out the client WebSocket is inside of system.net.
So anybody that has your own GitHub and your own source, you could use the exact code we wrote here, train it against your existing issues,
yes,
and it would work on your code.
Think about all the stuff that you could do with comments on your blog, information in CRMs, like all the kind of cognitive services somehow become available to you. That ran locally. We trained it locally. We ran it locally. There's a runtime that speaks that model's blob format and did that work. And I can go and take that and put it anywhere. And that is now available in ml.net. You can check it out at .net/machine learning at GitHub. So that's pretty freaking amazing. And that's just going to get better and better over time. So now, we have a little bit more time, and this is going to be even cooler.
Yeah, give me 1 second to reset this.
Differently cooler. Are you resetting this?
Yeah.
Am I hiding something from the people?
Yes, you are.
Okay, what am I talking about now?
Blazor.
Ooh, Blazor. Y'all know about Blazor? Okay, so we've seen JavaScript become the virtual machine for the internet, right? And we've seen transpilation, where someone transpiles something into JavaScript, like CoffeeScript turns into JavaScript, or TypeScript turns into JavaScript. But then we've also seen asm.js, which was a point in time. It was an assembly language style of JavaScript. And then WebAssembly, an actual assembly language binary format that is now available in all browsers, which gives you native performance. What if you could write a web UI using entirely .NET, and it would run in the browser, where .NET itself runs in the browser inside of WebAssembly? What if? Are you still fixing your demo?
Yeah, go and switch back to machine. And I'll let you talk to this, and then I'm going to switch back and write some code.
So pause for a second. Zoom in on the right-hand corner there, sir. See where it says mono.js? There are different instances of .NET. When we say .NET in the old days, it meant the .NET framework on Windows. Now it means .NET or .NET Core or Mono. .NET Core is a small runtime that runs on a half dozen or dozen, actually more than a dozen flavors of Linux. It runs great. It is a optimized tiny .NET. Mono, however, historically has continued to be improved. Amazing work. It powers Xamarin. It's an extremely portable, clean compiling version of .NET. What if we compiled that to WebAssembly? Well, they did. So now you're actually running .NET in the browser. So when he loaded this application,
do it again?
Did you do it again?
Is that better? If you want to see it again.
Now, yeah, go ahead, man. Hit refresh. Okay, so that just loaded .NET. Now, I think it's like a meg, or how big is it? Oh, see the DLLs? Scroll down, man. Scroll down. Look, it's actually loading DLLs. The DLLs haven't been compiled to .NET. The DLLs are just DLLs that you write. Those then come down, and then the browser freaking runs them. It's .NET Standard 2.0. Remember how we talk about the importance of .NET Standard? There are multiple instances of .NET, and if you talk to the standard, your stuff will run on a Raspberry Pi, it'll run on an iPhone, it'll run in a browser. What if the browser doesn't support WebAssembly? It'll fall back to asm.js, which is that point in time between JavaScript and WebAssembly, but this supports all modern browsers. So what he's doing right here is he's got a function called onHover. Everything in functions there is C#. He's writing C#, he's writing on hover and on not hover, and he's got this thing called text. It's just sitting there, string text. But he needs to go and bind that page model to something that's on the page. So he might say there in the H1 something like at text. You're writing razor in the browser right here. So now he's going to put at text there and at text there, and then theoretically, you don't want to just change stuff. You want to react to events. So what if there was an event he could react to, like on mouse over? Now, notice how everything just turned purple. That's a sign that that H1 is now understood by the runtime. He says on mouse over, on mouse out. And now, based on JavaScript client-side events, he is going to run, to be clear, client-side .NET events.
I called C# from HTML tags.
From the DOM. Make it so, sir.
Okay.
He forgot something. It's gonna fail horribly.
I
on
did.
Mouse out, man.
I did. I put, on par- mouse I put out. Parents up here. There you go.
Save your file. At, dude, at.
Okay, you guys are killing me.
Doesn't feel good.
I'm glad you cried from next.
Doesn't feel good, does it? This is why I started drinking.
Okay.
We good?
So refresh the app over here.
Mm-hmm. Now, some people might say, I don't want to download a 1 meg runtime or whatever meg runtime of .NET. It's like, well, then you probably shouldn't have a giant PNG on the homepage of your website. Look at that. Jump over into fetch data for me. We're out of time, but jump over to fetch data. Clicking on that, now pop over and show me the fetch data controls in the code, man.
You'll
fetch data, open that up, scroll down. That's calling HTTP, get JSON. It's using the .NET API that you know how to use. But this is web stuff. This is web stuff. We're not trying to do XAML, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. This is not trying to be web forms again. This is, I have expertise, I have understanding about .NET and C#, but I want to use the web and I want to do it in a standard way. This is a standard way. It's an experiment, but we think people will dig it. You like it? It's called Blazor.
So just to recap, .NET Core 2.1 is available today. Please grab that. ML.NET Preview is available today as well. Please grab that and give us feedback on it.
Yep.
.NET Core support for desktop is announced. Preview later this year, we hope. And the Blazor stuff, please try it out and give us feedback on it. And
we need to get the go there. Hang on, to the next one. You got to take a picture of that. Here's where you should go check out. These are some of the sessions you want to check out and explore. And then he's a manager, so the feedback doesn't matter to him. But there's going to be a QR code. Take a picture of that and give me amazing feedback and give him suboptimal feedback. And then I will put that through ML.net, and I'll write about it on my blog, and we'll see what the sentiment analysis talks about, which Scott you like better. We'll see if machine learning knows how to tell Scotts apart. This Scott sucked, but the other Scott was amazing. See how that works out. So check it out. Complete your evaluations, please. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.